Father, thank you so much for this morning, for the last several weeks that you've given to us to study your word, but study think about how to study your word. So help us today as we bring this to a close and to think about studying a topic. Please be with us. Grant us the illumination of your spirit that we may know you and know your word and live and believe rightly before you. Help us to study these things for your glory and our good. And we ask this in Jesus' name, amen. Okay, so what we're doing today is thinking about studying a topic. So principles for studying a topic. The overview there, we're going to talk about comparison and contrast. But what we're doing here is we're doing something similar to what we've looked at with the what, the why, and the so what. On the what, we're identifying a topic and then studying the key words and the key passages of that topic. On the why, we're comparing and contrasting and summarizing the words and passages of the topic. And then the so what, we're setting the what and the why of that topic beside another set of circumstances. So basically, we're doing in a topic, we're doing what we did in a single topic. We're doing it, in a single passage, we're doing it with a bunch of different passages. Okay? So so studying a topic. And I thought that this would be good for us to do, because there's a lot of most things that have to do with studying a passage. Bible study really is kind of isolated on one passage, and I thought it would be good, like, here's how it works with multiple passages. Here's how it works with studying a topic. So let's get in. That's an overview. Let's get into what this actually is. So with the comparison and contrast, that's basically what we're doing across various passages that are about similar subject matter, about similar topic. So again, with the what, similar principles for what, why, and so what. The what connects with what, how do they relate? That's just doing that passage after passage. What connects with what? How do they relate? And then the why, we're giving attention to the historical, literary, and canonical context. So again, we're just doing that for every passage that we're studying. And then the so what, we're placing the what and the why, our summaries of that, our synthesis of that. Those statements, we're placing that beside the head, heart, habit, and hands spheres of application. I added, after going back through what we did last week, on the so what, I added habit to the list of head, heart, and hands. So habit has to do with character, has to do with who we are. So it has to do with character. I thought that didn't necessarily fit with any of the head, heart, or hands areas. So I added that, and you know, next time I do that, that'll be part of the next time I do this, that'll be part of the study. So all we're doing is we're doing the same thing that we do with individual passages, and we're doing it with multiple passages. But the one key difference is that the question that we may be asking is something that we have. We're not necessarily submitting to the questions of these passages, of each individual passage, but we're bringing a question, we're bringing a specific question or a specific topic to these passages to get an answer from all of them. So our question may not be answered by any one particular passage. But it will be answered by various passages. So I've got an example for us, but just a specific question that you may ask, that you may have, that's not answered by any single passage in kind of a comprehensive form, would be like, why does God allow suffering? Or what are God's purposes for allowing evil to continue? That no one passage is going to address that, but many passages do. Does that make sense? What I'm saying? You get this is yes, no. Yeah. Do I need to spend more time on this? Okay. All right. So let's do this. We're going to be looking at a specific topic. So we're going to do some practice even as we get into the principles with it. So the topic that I've chosen for us to go through is what is the fear of God according to the wisdom books. So what do the wisdom books teach about the fear of God? What are the wisdom books? Anybody list out the wisdom books or give me one or two?
Proverbs.
Proverbs is one. Good. Psalms would be one, yeah. Although, and that kind of bleeds into another area, but.
Song of Solomon.
Song of Solomon, Job, Ecclesiastes, good. So the three that we're going to focus on as far as what do the wisdom books teach about the fear of God, the three that we're going to focus on within the wisdom books are Job, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes. So we identified our topic. And then, and we narrowed it down a little bit. Now we need to identify the key words and passages for our topic. So key words or themes would be fear, the phrase fear of God, the fear of the Lord. And we're looking for passages that state that. Does that make sense? All right, so you identify your topic, and then you identify what are the key words and phrases associated with that topic. Okay, make sense? Yeah? Okay, so there's just I put a note here about if you know the why of a book, if you know the purpose of a book, then that will provide some guidance for where to start. So if you're like, I don't know where to start on this, well, just think back to passages that you have studied, books that you do know the purpose of it. If you know the purpose of that book, why it's given, then you will. You'll have a good place to start. Maybe that's not the only place that you'll be, but you'll have a good place to start. So, for example, if you're studying the sovereignty of God, Isaiah is a really good book to start with as far as the sovereignty of God goes. All right, why? Because, well, that's in part what the book is about, is about the sovereignty of God applied to the people of Israel who are about to set off the dominoes for their own exile.
If you know Solomon, he's the wisest man in the world. So let's see what he says.
Good, yeah, yeah. And yeah, so going to, if you know his history in 1 Kings, and that makes mention of Proverbs, and yeah, good. Good. So there are different helps, different ways to approach things in order to get you started on this. So identify the topic, identify the key words, and so what we're doing with this now is we're looking at the fear of God in Job, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes to see what it says about the fear of God. So we did Job 28:28 last week in part with our study of Job 28, just in getting some so what and putting the principles together with what, why, and so what. What did we say that this passage teaches? Does anybody remember? Or maybe like a phrase or like how would you summarize what this passage says?
Job 28.
28:28. And he said to man, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to turn away from evil is understanding. What does that say? What is the what?
The fear of the Lord is turning away from
evil. Okay, so fear of the Lord is turning away. Fear of the Lord is turning away. And vice versa, right? All right. And then, so there's some ethics involved here, right? And then what else? That's one part of it.
Wisdom and understanding.
Wisdom and understanding. So fear of the Lord has to do with ethics, and it also has to do with wisdom, with knowledge, with understanding, right? Okay? So anybody want to take a crack at, like, what, put that in a full sentence that rephrases what this says?
That if you have an understanding of the fear of the Lord, the wisdom from that will make you turn away from evil.
Okay, if you have The fear of the Lord.
If you have the understanding.
If you have the understanding of the fear of the Lord.
Yeah, you will.
Then that wisdom will lead you to.
Away from evil.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, just kind of flipping things around. That's good. That's good. Anybody else have a thought on that? On how to articulate this?
To me, it seems like turning away from evil, understanding shows understanding is wisdom in action. So
understanding is wisdom in action. Okay.
You have this wisdom because you fear the Lord, and you show that wisdom by turning away from evil.
Okay.
Putting it into practice.
Okay. And what is the, if we're studying the fear of God or the fear of the Lord, how is the fear of the Lord the subject of that?
The fear of the Lord is going to be the start of all of your actions.
Okay. Okay, so the fear of the Lord is the starting point for your actions.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's pretty good. And that'll bleed into going to Proverbs. Okay, so fear of the Lord, starting point of actions, yeah. Here's what I came up with was the fear of God is expressed in a life of moral uprightness. The fear of God is expressed in a life of moral uprightness. So trying to be concise and capture it in a clear statement. Concise and clear. Okay, so that would be Job. Now let's go to Proverbs, and we're going to be in a couple of different places in Proverbs. Proverbs 1 verse 7. Okay, Proverbs 1, verse 7, and why are we here? Well, the fear of the Lord, okay? There's our topic, there's our subject. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So, fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And then this is contrasted with fools. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So knowledge and wisdom and instruction all seem to be related, and they're related to the fear of the Lord. And then you have this beginning word and this despised word. So beginning would be a noun, despise would be a verb. And so there's a so if this is put in a contrast, then what are we saying about or what would be a contrast to despise? What would be an antonym to despise? So an antonym is instead of a similar word, you have a different word.
Cherish.
Okay. So the fool does not cherish wisdom and instruction, but the wise person does. Okay, good. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. What would you say as far as a what of this? What does this say? What does this teach?
Teaches that you do not want to despise wisdom and instruction.
Why?
Because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of your knowledge or understanding.
Okay. So the fear of the Lord would be, can you condense that down?
Yeah. You could say you want to pursue the Lord in instruction to gain knowledge. Now, so, leaving out the whole...
Pursue the Lord?
Yeah.
Everybody's going to be accountable for...
So either fear the Lord or be a fool.
Okay, fear the Lord or be a fool. That would be homiletical. That's good. Homiletical meaning like sermonic.
There's a lot of smart people that are fools because they don't know how to use their knowledge for wisdom. So they're foolish.
Right.
They're smart.
Yeah.
They're a lot smarter than I am. But they're foolish because they don't know how to apply their knowledge.
So how do we apply that? How would we apply that knowledge in light of what verse 7 says?
Read Proverbs.
Okay. But we're reading it right now, so.
Apply your knowledge by what the Lord tells us.
Good, yeah. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. So a right application of knowledge that leads to wisdom, that would be wisdom, a wise application of knowledge, starts with the fear of the Lord, right? So
the implication is that fools don't humble themselves under the Lord's authority. That's the implication. Mm-hmm. I mean,
right, yeah.
So they just don't, I mean, they don't either fear him, they don't believe that he exists or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They don't humble. So if you fear the Lord, then you are humble enough to come under his authority.
So yeah, humility.
And then that's... obviously, salvation is involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a working of mm-hmm. the Holy Spirit that causes that.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is wise men and fear the Lord.
Yes. And Proverbs 1:7 would say that starts there, right? So similar to what Cassandra was saying about Job 28, there's a starting point here, right?
Yeah.
Now... what is, we haven't gotten there yet. We can do this now and then draw from it later. What's different about Job 28:28 and Proverbs 1:7?
Job had like two parallel phrases. These are contrasting phrases.
Okay. So that would be more, Job 28:28 was the parallelism was in the going in the same direction. The parallelism here is going in opposite directions. So showing a contrast where that would be a true comparison. Okay, so that would be an observation of contrast. Observation of structure and formulation, how it's phrased, how it's worded. What else?
In Job, it was showing the result of what happens if you fear the Lord. This is kind of showing what would happen if you don't fear the Lord. You would be a fool.
Okay, so with the that emphasizing the contrast. Now let's take the fool stuff is it's important, okay? But so let's just go with the comparison, not the contrast, okay? So what we would be doing here is we're contrasting what Job 28:28 says with Proverbs 1:7. What I want you to do right now is to take out the fool element and just think about the positive statements that are here. Beginning of the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and Job 28:28 being, I can't remember what that says right now.
Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom.
That is wisdom, okay.
So it's actually saying that those who fear the Lord are wise.
Okay.
That they have wisdom.
Right.
This is saying that's the starting point of that. It's the beginning of mm-hmm. knowledge.
Now, so starting point there, and what I liked about what you said, Cassandra, was about result. What does, rather than the result coming from fools here, what's the result from Job 28:28? What does that lead to? What is that? What is
wisdom and understanding.
No, not that.
The departing from...
Yes, the ethics of it, right? So here you have starting point for knowledge. Here you have something about knowledge. There you have something about ethics, what you do. So here, what you think. There, what you do. All right? So do you see how they're saying similar things, but they're approaching it from different angles, They're saying something similar about the fear of the Lord, but they're approaching it from different angles. So what you think and what you believe is related to what you do. And over that is the fear of the Lord. Does that make sense? You see how we got there? Or got there? Yeah? A little bit? Okay. But all we're doing there is just saying, okay, what's similar and what's different?
We have to stay in Job and Proverbs. Can I give you a verse from Psalms?
No, we're going to go to Ecclesiastes.
Oh, okay.
But you can give me something from Psalms. Sure.
Okay. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all those who do his commandments.
Ooh, so who do his commandments, which has to do with what?
Action. That's
action, ethics, and then what was before it?
Well, it's wisdom. Those who fear the Lord have wisdom. A good understanding have all those who do his commandments.
Okay, so a right understanding, a right knowledge, a right belief leads to or is related to obedience, related to ethics, what you do, morality, as God defines it, right? What psalm is that?
Psalm 111, verse 10.
Psalm 111, verse 10. So Psalm 111, verse 10 puts these two together.
And the two verses that they have in parentheses is Job and Proverbs
1:7. There you go, yeah. So that says in one statement what this says in two, in two different places. See? So the Bible helps you out. Right? Okay, so now let's think about... So we got starting point for ethics, starting point for knowledge, starting point for ethics coming from Job, starting point for knowledge coming from Proverbs. Now let's go to Ecclesiastes, and we got a few different places in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes 3:14. And these are just kind of, this is a couple of things just to get us priming the pump, because Ecclesiastes is kind of a different nature. We talked about the background of Job last time. Proverbs is a little bit more straightforward, especially since it's at the beginning of where we were was in Proverbs 1. There are other Proverbs that basically say the same thing. Sorry, we're pressing pause on Ecclesiastes right now. Proverbs 9:10 talks about the fear of Yahweh being the beginning of wisdom. Proverbs 15:33 talks about wisdom being preceded by the fear of Yahweh. So they're all basically saying the same thing. Fear of God is the starting point for knowledge, for wisdom, for understanding. For the knowledge part. Okay, so now we got to do a little bit more work with Ecclesiastes because it's not as straightforward. So I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. I'm going to make sure I'm in the right. Am I chapter 3?
Yeah.
Did I hit the right? Good.
Yeah, there's fear in this verse.
I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything that nor anything taken from it. God has done it so that people fear before him. So that people fear before him. So whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can add to what God does. Nothing can be taken away from it. God does it. Why? So that people fear before him. So how would you summarize this? In other words?
God knows what he's doing.
God knows what he's doing.
You should be in awe of him because nothing else. You can't add to or take away. So you should be in awe that he is everything.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and specifically what he does, right? God has done it. Whatever God does endures forever. All right, so the actions of God lead to people fearing him, right? And then now let's go down to chapter 5, verse 7. For when dreams increase and words grow many, there is vanity, but God is the one you must fear. So if we back up to verse 6 or verse 5, Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. Let not your mouth lead you into sin, and do not say before the messenger that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? For when dreams increase and words go many, there is vanity, but God is the one you must fear. So this is, so again, Ecclesiastes is can be a difficult book, and this is where you would really, we're not addressing the why so much here yet, but this is where you need to understand, okay, what's going on in Ecclesiastes? Where am I? I need to get oriented in this. But at this point, we need, this is saying, refrain from making rash vows because of the unknowns about tomorrow, because of what you don't know, because of what you don't know, and because of God's anger. Instead, you should fear God. So don't say, don't talk about what you're going to do tomorrow. Instead, fear God. Why? Because you don't know. You don't know what the future holds. Then now let's go down to chapter 8, verse 12 and 13. We'll start in verse 10. Then I saw the wicked buried. They used to go in and out of the holy place and were praised in the city where they had done such things. This also is vanity, because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed speedily. The heart of the children of man is fully set to do evil. Though a sinner does evil 100 times and prolongs his life, yet I know that it would be well for those who fear God, because they fear before him. But it will not be well with the wicked, neither will he prolong his days like a shadow, because he does not fear God. So Solomon's point here is, hey, just look at how it ends up with the wicked. And the wicked here are not those who do the worst kinds of evil, but who live their life as though God does not exist. They don't. They live life under the sun and don't recognize, if you don't have heaven involved, if you don't have God involved in your life, then you pursue after all sorts of things that are just worthless and pointless, because after all, you're going to die in the end. And that's what Solomon is getting into here. And this plays out in verse 11, like, because when you do an evil act, it's not immediately punished by God. Well, then that just desensitizes you to God's judgment and God and threats of God's judgment, warnings of God's judgment. And so they fully set themselves to do evil. Verse 12 comes along and says something similar to what Asaph says in Psalm 73, I think, that look at the wicked, look at sinners around us and how things go well for them. Things seem to go well for them. But Solomon cuts to the chase and says, I know it's going to be well, even despite what it looks like, I know it's going to be well for those who fear God because they fear him, because they fear before him. But it will not be well with the wicked, neither will he prolong his days like a shadow, because he does not fear before God. In the end, the wicked will get it. In the end, the wicked will be judged by God. So there's this public conviction about God that Solomon says we need to maintain. And that leads to really an enduring hatred of sin. Despite how sinners endure in their lives, and it seems to go well for them. So far what we've done in Ecclesiastes is we've said, okay, God's free. He has this plan that nothing's going to thwart. He and his actions are free. Man's limited according to his knowledge. His life is brief, and it's full of contingencies. And so God should be feared for all these reasons. So you can see, if you're doing this study, like, Ecclesiastes has a lot to it, and where you're going to be spending more time than the others, perhaps, would be in Ecclesiastes. And then we go all the way to chapter 12. Verse 13. The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. So this would be a summary statement for the entire book of Ecclesiastes, and also a summary statement for Solomon's the last part of this of the book. And so it reflects the contents of the whole book. God is to be feared, he's to be, and what the commands that he reveals, so his revelation is to be obeyed. So they're to be obeyed as an expression of dependence upon him. So with Ecclesiastes, we're taking like four passages, and there are probably others that we could take as well in this, basically to set up for this. So let me go back to my notes, and so that you can see all of this. All right. So, what contribution does the passage contribute to, or does the passage make to the topic? So in Job, we talked about the fear of God emphasizing an ethical impact on life. So it affects what you do. In Proverbs, the fear of God provides a starting point for everything you do in life, and particularly our knowledge. And so the God that you know impacts how you live. So there's starting point, there's ethical impact, which does get after result. And then in Ecclesiastes, when you put those four passages together, what the fear of God leads you to is back to the God that is known in Revelation despite all the unknowns of life. So you remember in chapter 3, God has this plan, it's unassailable. What God does is unassailable. You can't take away from it, you can't add to it. So how should you respond? By fearing him, right? So there are unknowns there, but then the other parts, be careful how you speak and the vows that you make, and submit to his revelation, and have this public conviction about it's going to go well for those who fear God, and not for the wicked, even though it looks like it's going well for the wicked despite their lack of fear of God. So Ecclesiastes is leading people back to God. The God that is known in Revelation, despite all the unknowns of life. So that's my attempt to capture all three of those together. To say here's what these passages are contributing to the fear of God. Now we talk about why. Here we want to categorize what we've found by comparing and contrasting the passages. And I do want to just step back and say, okay. Here's the point. If you're not already overwhelmed, this is where you're going to get overwhelmed, because you're taking all of this data that you haven't actually studied, and I'm going to be talking through it because I have studied it, and you're going to be trying to keep up with me. And then you're also saying, wait, this is Sunday school, and Noah's saying I should do these things. Just pick out one or two things and run with that, okay? Don't, from the whole 4 weeks, all right? Don't say, this is how I have to study the Bible every single time. That's not what I'm saying. All right? So don't get overwhelmed. All right, now we step back in. Okay?
That's right. Well, preachers don't like to preach on top because it's a lot more work.
Yes. Yeah, well, you can, yeah, well, there are different reasons. But yes, it's a lot more work. It is a lot more work. So, all right. Now we're going to put in we're going to categorize what we've just done with Job, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes. We're going to compare and contrast the passages. We've already done that a little bit in the interaction between Job and Proverbs. So questions to ask at this stage. What do some of them say that others don't? What do each contribute to the overall topic? And what do they say together? So what do some say? What does this say that this doesn't? And what does this say that that doesn't? All right. And then what are the contributions? So an example of this, if I were like a chart guy, then this would actually be kind of in a chart or in a figure or a bunch of boxes. It would look like a spreadsheet, but I'm not that way. So I just put up.
Synthesize your summary.
Good. Synthesis together. Syn, that's S-Y-N, means together or with. So with, and then thesis, the statement. You're putting the different statements together into one statement. So you're taking three statements and putting them into one, a synthesis. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah? It's a lot of work, though. So fear of God in the wisdom books or in Job, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes, they all talk about ethics, what you do, how you live. They all talk about it in some way, shape, or form. With Proverbs, you've got to branch out because it has to do with how you live. Proverbs and Ecclesiastes directly apply to knowledge, although Job gets into that, but it more emphasizes ethics. So maybe you could put Job in here too, but I prefer to leave it out and emphasize the ethics part. Ignorance, Ecclesiastes and Job, again, Ecclesiastes is a direct statement, and Job, it's implied based upon the whole book. And then Revelation, not the book of Revelation, but the doctrine of Revelation. God reveals himself in the world, in creation, and in his word. And all three of them, including Proverbs, you have to go to a different passage for this to see this directly. But Job, Ecclesiastes, and Proverbs all emphasize Revelation, the doctrine of Revelation. So, and Revelation and knowledge are together. So, or go together. So, that's an example, a quick example of categorizing it. You could go into all sorts of different studies with this. Like even in how many words does it take one author to say what the other author says in comparison? So, like in Job, really short in one time. Proverbs, you have three different verses and all that stuff. And you know what that's called? A dissertation. You can write 300 pages on that. I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying that's one way to compare and contrast and to categorize and all that stuff. But what we're working with are these four categories with ethics, knowledge, ignorance, and revelation. So now we're going to summarize the comparisons and the contrasts. And here's the example of the fear of God in the wisdom books. All right, so Job emphasizes that the fear of God produces an upright life. So there's ethics, starting point for ethics. Proverbs expands on Job's emphasis on ethics to explicitly include the knowledge of God as a starting point for ethics. So we're going to back up even further, not just what you do, but how you think, what you believe, before you do what you do. And Ecclesiastes expands on Proverbs, so it's how this is working out is that we're basically working backwards. Okay, so we're backing up. And this would make sense if Job is to be treated something like the introduction to the Bible. Here are the issues that you need to know about going into it, but it doesn't say everything. So Ecclesiastes expands on Proverbs' emphasis on the starting point by saying that the fear of God is also the end point, too, precisely because of all the things one does not know. Remember the end of the matter in Ecclesiastes 12? The end of the matter is what? Fear God
and keep his commandments.
Like that's Solomon saying, okay, you're gonna need to go back and read my book again, and I intend for you to do that. Remember, as you've come to the end of the book, at the end of what I'm saying, here are the main points. Fear God, keep his commandments. But when you understand what's going on in the book, like there are a lot of things that you don't know, and there are a lot of things that just seem pointless and worthless because it all ends up on the trash heap of history anyway, including your own life, it would seem. So how do you keep from going into despair? Well, remember what the end point of life is. The end point, the goal of life, the outcome of life, the end point of life is to fear God. So you have Ecclesiastes saying, here's the end of life. Here's what your life is all about. Fear God. Here's what Proverbs is saying. Proverbs is saying, here's the starting point of your life. Fear God. And then Job is there to say, here's an expression of the fear of God. It's how you live. It's what you do. It's your morality. It's your ethics. That are done explicit acknowledgement of God in your life. So you see how the different categories are working themselves into where we can put these together in a more refined way. Proverbs starting point, Job midpoint, and Ecclesiastes endpoint. Okay? So, but to continue on with what I've got here, this point in Ecclesiastes takes us back to Job and how the fear of God produces a godly life, even when things go wrong for no apparent reason. So now we bring in what's going on in Job's life. He doesn't know why he's suffering. He doesn't know what has happened. He knows that he fears God, and he doesn't deserve what's happened to him, according to what is in contrast to what his friends are saying. And so if the end point, if the goal of life is to fear God just as much as it is the starting point, and then here's the fear of God expressed in a godly life in Job, then what happens when things go wrong? You still fear God, even though you don't know what's going on. You don't know why this is happening. You still fear God. And even because you don't know what's going on, you still fear God, which is what Job 1 through 28 is stressing. Look at Job. Look how good he's doing, even though everything has gone wrong for him. He's still fearing God, right? And then you get into chapter 29 and things go haywire for him. So when you put Ecclesiastes and Proverbs together, and this wouldn't be the only, I need to press pause here and say, this is the way that my mind was flowing as I'm working this out. This wouldn't be the only way to express things. But I'm trying to give you with this example of how these books are interacting. I'm not giving you a stream of consciousness, but I am giving you an example of here's how I'm putting these books into conversation with each other. Okay, here's what Job says, but here's what Proverbs says, and here's what Ecclesiastes says to both of them, and then to one of them, and all of that stuff, okay? So I know it's overwhelming, but stick with me, okay? We're getting somewhere with this.
Now, if you were preaching, you mm-hmm. would start probably with a dissertation on what the fear of the God means.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say, like, here's what the fear of God means at the, like, here's a definition of it, unless that's how I was approaching it. I would much rather ask the question at the beginning, what does the fear of God mean? Well, then here's three different ways to answer that question, and each of them are related. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's how I would prefer to do it, but it could also be done like, here's what the fear of God means, and here's what it doesn't mean, and things like that. Is that kind of answer your question a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Maurice, I think our visitors are here.
Okay, I was just wondering about that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so, but yeah, I mean, defining what we mean by the fear of the Lord, I would depend on what these are saying to give us an aspect of it, so. okay, so Ecclesiastes and Proverbs are interacting together. They're saying to one another, shoulder to shoulder, we rightly expect life to be predictable because of how God has ordered the world. Like when you read through Proverbs, like this is what happens, and here's the result that we should expect. Have you ever read Proverbs and say, like, that is really clear cut? Like, there's no exception here. There's no or acknowledgement of exception or anything like that. This is, do this. This happens, right? And that's actually true. God has ordered the world in such a way that if you live your life in such a way, guess what you get? You get a predictable life. And that's a good thing. That's a gift from the Lord, right? Having a life full of drama is not a good thing. All right. That's why we shouldn't be busybodies and start drama for people. We want Proverbs people. But Ecclesiastes comes along and says, there's still much we don't know. We don't know certain things. And life in the world is full of frustration because of sin, right? So this is gathering in a lot of what Ecclesiastes has to say. So Proverbs says, hey, here's what we know. And it produces order. And Ecclesiastes says, yeah, but there's lots that we don't know. And they lead to frustrations. But both of them are saying, fear God. Right? Fear God. Job comes along and he says, hey, I'm the example of this. I'm the example of Proverbs. I'm the example of Ecclesiastes. All right? I'm not saying Job the person. I'm saying Job the book. He wouldn't know anything about this. in his life. He knows now, though. Job perfectly exemplifies how the fear of God draws together the predictability of Proverbs and the unpredictability of Ecclesiastes. So Job fears God, therefore he is right before God, as demonstrated by his upright life. That's how the book begins. But then Ecclesiastes, fearing God includes trusting in him, trusting in God, even when life goes wrong. Job also exemplifies that. So the linchpin for these various emphases is divine revelation. Job has no revelation, while Proverbs and Ecclesiastes do. Still, Job fears God despite what he does not know, which Ecclesiastes emphasizes is a right response. Proverbs emphasizes that wisdom is a gift from God that produces an upright life, which is also what Job emphasizes. So this whole list of this example of summarizing your comparisons and your contrast is basically what I've given you is me working out those categories. What do they say? What are they saying to one another? And then you come out with a statement like this, synthesize your summaries. The fear of God starts with the reality of God's existence, relies on God's revelation, and endures to the end without compromise in an upright life. That's one way to synthesize all of this. Is that the only way? No. Is that the perfect way? No. But I think it's accurate. I think it's true based upon what I've studied. So, by the way, you need to be 4 for 4 on references to our website in this class, because that is the subtitle for it. Consult our website. If you go to my bio page on our website, I think it's under our shepherds, I have a link to the Fear of God paper that I wrote for as part of my master's course. And so if you're interested, there's a lot of Hebrew in it. It is technical, but if you're interested in it, then you can find out more. And I drew a lot of what I said here from that. If you want to see the work done, then go there. Okay. And you can download that and all that. So that's like the why we're studying them individually, why we're putting them together and putting them, we're having them talk to each other. Is that, any questions there? I know, a lot. It's a lot. But when you can get to this kind of statement, what should you do in your life? Fear God. Why? Because it's the starting point for what you know and what you believe. It's the reason why you live the way that you do. And it's why you live the way that you do, even though you don't know all the things that you want to know. I mean, that's, to me, that's life transforming. That means all what I'm called to do is steward the things that I know, steward my life, what I've been given to do. How do I know? Because of something like the fear of God. And that's life shaping, life transforming. That's why doing this kind of work, even though it's overwhelming, can be overwhelming, it's worth it. It is so worth it. All right? And how do you get good at something like this? You start doing it. You just do it. Like, you don't wait until you know something in order for you to go and do it. No, you go and do it so that you'll know it. All right? You make mistakes and things like that. So there's my coach side. Like, no, play the game, right? That's my coach. All right. So what? Set the what and why of the topic beside a second set of circumstances in personal life, church life, culture, etc., to show what the teaching might look like and what you believe, how you feel, who you are, and how you live. So the head, heart, habit, and hands. An example here from the fear of God. When affliction comes, believers, for the head, so what you think, what you believe. When affliction comes, believers must cling to what they know and believe about God and what he says so that they do not lose heart. So I'm looking at that the application I'm looking at specifically has to do with affliction. And so definitely looking at this from the perspective of Job, all right? Heart, all of life is lived before God, so these are my affections. All of life is lived before God. Therefore, let the truth about God's sovereignty and wisdom drive you to despise sin and love holiness. So that's bringing in how affections impact ethics, how we live, what we do. All right? In order for me to live rightly, I need to also love rightly. I need to love what God loves and hate what God hates. And the fear of God is going to help me think about that and order my affections. Then the habit, who am I? Who I am is defined by God. Who I am is defined by God. This is, and that affects my character. I am shaped by God's reality and his revelation. So this, so my character is going to fall under the fear of God as it has to do with all three of the knowledge, ethics, and the goal of life. So my character is defined by God. And then hands, work, family, leisure, they're all gifts from God that should be enjoyed as expressions of worship. That more has to do with Ecclesiastes than Job and Proverbs. But work, family, leisure, these are all gifts from God. So we don't live for the weekend. We live today, right? Or all I think about is work. No, that you're getting things distorted. Or I'm just a family person. Yeah, these are all good things, but overemphasis on one or on any one of them will lead you to distort the gifts of God and lead you away from the fear of God. They're to be enjoyed as expressions of worship. So that would be my attempt to say, okay, here's my what and why, and then relating it to through these spheres of application to a different set of circumstances. So there's the summary. And now I'll read the conclusion and any questions you might have, and then we'll pray and be dismissed. The goal of Bible study is to understand the united intent of the divine and human authors with as much precision as possible so that the student may say what the passage or topic says, why it says it, and what the ramifications are for life. The study above, so what we've done over the last 4 weeks, has shown why this endeavor requires time and effort. Yet, God has given us his spirit for illumination and a desire to know his word. The goal of these sessions has been to identify the principles necessary for sound interpretation, to suggest categories for organizing the process of interpretation, and to provide practical tips for arriving at a sound interpretation. As a reminder, don't be overwhelmed by the content of this series. Instead, focus on one or two components from this study, or seek to apply the principles to one passage over a several-week period. Bible study is as much skill as it is science. May God bless you, your family, our church, and our community, because you know him through knowing his revealed word. So, that concludes my presentation. Any questions? So, again, I'll emphasize this and then I'll pray. If you're overwhelmed, it's your fault now, okay? Because of all the things that you know, and because I have already told you multiple times, don't be overwhelmed. Just take one or two of these things that I've talked about in here and put them into what you already do. Or try to take all of them over the next several weeks, six, like do this between now and Christmas. On one passage. So those are a couple of different options. Do whatever you want with it, okay? All right, let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word. Thank you for how you have revealed yourself in your word so that we may know you, even in spite of all the things that we don't know, even about you, but also about your plan for this world and what you do in this world. Help us to fear you. Based on what we know about you, based upon what you have revealed about yourself that we should know about you. So please help us. Help us to grow as students of the Bible so that we can help one another in our time of need when we're in times of fog and in confusion so that we can be beacons of light for one another in those times to be able to think clearly, to live rightly, and to pursue God-fearing, godly ends in our lives. So please help us. Please be with us. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you.
My pleasure.